All right, all right, all right. It is Friday morning and we are ready to look after you today and to take you through some of the stuff that's happening in the news. As I mentioned earlier, we've got Dr. Victor popping in a short while. Benedict Macha, our special guest this morning. We haven't seen Ben in a while and he's very easy and happy behind the microphone. You can tell this is not novel to him. You've done this a couple of million times before. Do you remember when we did those midnight shows?
Yep.
In the very beginning.
Well, I did the midnight show. You were on at 4.
I was on at 4 in the morning. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Benedict and I, along with John Webb, who ended up doing Carte Blanche.
Oh, wow.
And Alan Ford, who you know well from this show. He's been on a couple of times. We did a Christmas Carols one year.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've still got the tape.
We sang Christmas Carols. Mm-hmm.
Can I be the judge of that?
No. Those days are over.
Can I just listen, watch, you know?
But we did. It was for charity. We raised money for Nkosi's Haven, as I recall.
Yep.
That was what we did one Christmas.
I'm actually looking for a tape player to...
So
to
you can play this and so embarrass me. Yes. You threatened me with this the other day.
Yes.
Benedict said
I was looking at your tape player on your shelf.
Yeah, he says he's got a recording.
That'll chew it up.
He said he's got a recording. But we'll if it does, I'll make sure that the machine does destroy it. We don't need any record of that. Although, I mean, listen, we had fun.
We weren't bad.
It was a sellout crowd. Let's put it that way. All right. So a few things on the agenda for this morning that we still want to get to. I mentioned to Simpiwe there's some red flag things that people are looking at. Right. So when dating happens in the 21st century, people look for what they call red flags. These are the things that are no-nos. If you see this in a partner, you get the hell away. So it's very small on the screen, but I'll try and read it out to you so you can understand what's going on here. So these are obviously American red flags. So it's very peculiar to people who are dating in America. There's women and men. They've separated them by genders. And then it seems that the biggest red flag for a woman in America is if someone, as a obviously, I'd expect most of these to be men, but if they identify as a MAGA Republican, then a lot of women are totally turned off. The biggest turn off for men is that they identify as a communist. So if a woman if a woman identifies as a communist, that puts off the majority of men. 64% of men will say no to that. And then there are a couple of other things, and we'll get your comments on these in just a second or two.
I'm surprised that communism still means what, how it's interpreted. I mean, in the old days, is relative, of course, but even in this country, communism was regarded as like extremely bad in the mainstream sort of apartheid-led communities, right? But I mean, communism today in South Africa, it's not really that big a deal. You got Dr. Bladen Zimande and a couple of his pals.
Exactly. It's like 15 people. But there are a lot of students who still flirt with the idea. So I think that's where it comes from. So we're talking about dating here. I think it must be around that age then. And no one's looking to date Dr. Bladen Zimande at this stage. So the biggest worry women have besides MAGA Republicans is that men may have no hobbies. And I think that's a very big red flag. I reckon that's an important one to pay attention to. If someone doesn't have any hobbies at all, that's dodgy. The other ones that worry men.
So you're thinking, what, serial killer vibes?
That could be a hobby, though.
But also just, the kind of guys who don't have a hobby don't really have a lot of motivation to do many things.
Mm.
So they might become those irritating husbands who never do anything. And for the wife or the girlfriend, have to kind of motivate them to do stuff. If they have hobbies, shows that they have passions and interests and that they're engaged in the world. And that's also a big worry for men, by the way. So men don't like, that's the second biggest category for them in red flags, women who have no hobbies. The other ones that are big for girls are that they listen to Joe Rogan.
Why are we judging Joe Rogan?
I don't know. That they identify as conservative, that they... refuse to see the Barbie movie.
That's a red flag.
That's a red flag for some women.
Americans, not borders.
And there are a couple of others, and it goes all the way down. The thing that...
Have you seen the Barbie movie?
No, I have not. That would count me out of a lot of dating
pools.
No,
I have not. I'm actually not a big movie lover or watcher, so I don't watch a lot of movies when they are released. I'm not like, oh my gosh, like this just dropped. I did watch a movie recently, but... I'm not that person. That's not me.
I haven't been to see the movies for a long time, but I certainly wouldn't go to see Barbie.
I want to go see Dune on screen.
Apparently it's phenomenal, yeah. Right? That's everybody's raving about Dune. Everyone. All ages.
Have you read the books?
No, but I do remember when that series came out and Sting was the one bad guy.
Mm.
That's all I remember from when we were kids. It was like there was also a movie, yeah. But nothing near what they can do now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So, yeah, Dune is something I probably would see, but otherwise, no, nothing really on the agenda. Listen, the red flag that isn't really a red flag, and I thought this was interesting, because to me this would be a major one. They look better in person.
Whoa, is that a red flag?
I don't get this at all. Surely if they look worse in person, because everything is swiping left and right now on these dating apps, people misrepresent themselves. They use a picture from 8 years ago. We've had these discussions before. If someone looks better in person, how could that be a red flag? That's like a, yes, look at this. This is better than I expected.
Yeah, hmm? Don't understand that one. In fact, it reminds me of a lady who shared like her recent dating experience.
Mm.
In America, they have like 50,000 dating apps, right? And she was on one of these ones that we don't know. She matched the guy. They agreed on a date at a restaurant. And the night of the date, she's at the place and she basically is looking directly at the guy. And the guy's like, kind of like, I don't know who you are, looking around. And she's like, hi, I'm Simpiwe from the dating app. And he's like, you look nothing like your pictures. He immediately was like, wait, I feel like I was been catfished. Like,
right.
You know, and she's like, I don't change any of my pictures. I don't edit them. And then we asked to see the picture in question from the dating app. Ma'am, that was taken about like 8 years ago. Like, you didn't
not
edit
fair.
It.
You don't
you
do that.
You didn't edit it, yeah. But you
do you remember
have...
how much shit you and Ben gave me for my LinkedIn? Now, who changes their LinkedIn picture? I mean, if you're changing jobs, sure. You know, maybe you have like a corporate photo.
You
I don't know. How does it work,
almost
Ben?
Like every 5 years.
You're in corporate world. In the corporate world, you'll understand this. For LinkedIn, I hadn't changed my picture since
for
I started
like 20
LinkedIn.
Years. You need
so
to change
not 20
it.
Years. Maybe maximum 8. How often are you meant to change these
so,
things?
I've changed my LinkedIn profile pic a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But Facebook and X, I haven't since pretty much the beginning.
But for you, LinkedIn is more important than Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, I'm not really on Twitter. I don't like Twitter.
I'm only friends with you on Facebook. I don't even know if we're connected on LinkedIn, are we?
I don't know.
But, you know, to me, that's like... That's the one where you at least matters what you look like. That's
what,
a business.
LinkedIn?
That's the business
that's
one.
That's where they judge you the most. That's why you have to look all suited up and look like a very well-educated...
I'll change it today, all right?
Well, you haven't changed...
I still haven't changed it. Why would I? Who am I trying to impress?
Your future business associates.
Please, man. What people think about me already out there? Are you joking?
See, that's a catfish moment. And then they see you and they're like, oh.
I think, what's that? It just looks like that.
He actually looks like a nice guy.
All right, I'm changing it right now. You guys are putting so much pressure on me. I'm going to do it right now.
I thought you had changed it then. Like,
no, I'll do it now. Okay,
oh,
get
thank
it done.
You. Like, it's
honestly,
all
I mean,
time.
Yes.
Like, really, like.
But guys, you know, we were talking about this earlier on before the show. Life, you know, America is a very weird place.
Mm.
I lived in the States for a while, for a year. And it's just, and I lived in, you know, in the I think it's called the Midwest.
Yeah, where were you exactly?
In Chicago.
Okay. Well, it's not really the Midwest. I mean, Chicago is a serious, serious city.
Yeah, but in the burbs. Outside,
isn't it known as the Windy City?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cold. I mean, the coldest winter morning I woke up to was like minus 29. So it was just proper, proper cold. But it's also, you know, it's... One of the most bizarre experiences out of quite a number is walking like in your Walmart, could be Pick and Pay, could be Checkers, could be Macro.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, more Pick and Pay and Checkers than Macro. But walking in an aisle and being able to, you know, to buy like serious caliber bullets.
Yeah.
With the milk and cereal.
Yeah, you can pick up like rounds for a 50 cal.
you know.
As long as your finger. Slugs.
It's like, and why that was quite shocking for me, because when I lived there, there was also a number of serious shootings while I was there. The Las Vegas one where the guy shot and killed 60 people and 400.
From that hotel room, right? Yeah, he shot down at the crowd.
I remember having a discussion with some guys in a bar in Springfield, Missouri, of all places. I was going to the Grand Prix in Texas. And, you know, that was kind of my overnight stop. And I was trying to, you know, have a conversation with these guys around understanding the Second Amendment in the context of the shootings that happened. Because the Second Amendment is essentially around...
the right for citizens to arm themselves.
To arm themselves. And if I remember correctly, it was to arm themselves to protect themselves against an errant state.
Correct.
That was kind of the foundation.
That was the idea, because it was at the time of the American Revolution.
Correct.
And the biggest threat to anyone's safety at that point was the government. You can argue it still is.
Well, yeah, I won't go down there, but yeah, but there's no the world has changed, right? So the interpretation of the Second Amendment rights hasn't, though, because I asked the guys, you know, in that context. And the response was very simple. Second Amendment says we can have our guns.
So and we have as many as we want.
And we're keeping our guns.
Right.
It was simple as that.
Right.
You know.
So is that a red flag for you, Ben? Because I wanted to know what Simpiwa's red flags are. Because compared to this list, you didn't seem none of those mattered to you as much.
No. Yeah. Like I get maybe what you might stand for if you're a liberal, conservative, maybe.
But politics has become so divisive. So, yeah, so in this country, it's not such a big deal.
Maybe I could. But I thought that would be like serious. Like I can tell you now in the South African context, a big red flag for me is a man that lives in Midrand and has no furniture. Red flag. Number one. Number two is also polo drivers that say, I know my car. Red flag. Those guys are driving and it's on empty. The petrol tank is like, and they're like, I know my car. I can still make it to the next destination. I'm like, sir, no.
All right.
You know, I thought those are the
These
the
are
things.
Very specific things. Lives in Midrand, has no furniture, or drives a polo and says they know their car when the thing's
Same
empty.
WhatsApp group.
All right.
Like, I'm just like, those are red flags. Like, excuse me. And then going to the hobbies, I've now come to understand that someone who is a gamer can actually be a red flag. Because you know all they want to do? It's just game. They don't want to go out. Yeah. They don't want to interact with people. Like, it's great. Like, I love it for you. But I'm so done with Call of Duty and what.
And
what, like.
Ditto cyclists. Oh. I mean, we were talking about that earlier. That would, for me, if I met someone and they were a cyclist, I'd be like, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's a red flag for me. Like, yeah, I could go on. But those are the ones that are, like, they triggered me immediately when I heard red flags.
I think those are very good. They're very specific. Those are things that you've learned through... obviously, through hard experience or trial and error, these are not the things that you must go for.
Remember we spoke earlier on around the couch situation? I feel that you could, it could be really good for you. Just kind of let it out. You know?
Yeah. Go to the psychologist. There's a shrink somewhere waiting with your number.
That's just letting y'all know. Those are my red flags. The minute I hear that, I'm just like, sir, bye. Sarah,
well, I noticed that, you know, that that girl we were talking about with the this is chai, that's chai, remember? So suddenly everyone else is caught onto that.
Oh, wow. Took you guys long
enough. I saw it. Or, you brought it up, and this shows you how far ahead of everything this show always is.
Yes.
But there was this girl who was saying she won't date guys who don't have money, blah, blah, blah. This is otherwise, I'm chai. In other words, she's chai, she's out.
She's out.
And it's now become a trending thing. It was all over X yesterday, I noticed. And that's a full week after we brought it up.
Can I also say this in the context of red flags and like even women saying, I won't date a guy that's broke or who doesn't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to contextualize it, right? I might say, meeting a guy who doesn't have a car, it's a bit of a turnoff because I understand the convenience that a car brings. right? It, right now,
but as a woman, you don't want to be picking him up from somewhere.
Really don't.
Even if you love him, that's not going to work for long.
Right? But I'm not necessarily judging the kind of car that you have because I also understand how expensive having a car is.
Well, look at you. You have to service yours for 36K and get new tires.
You know what I mean? So I think sometimes...
So you're not judging them unless they're driving a Polo.
And they say they know their car. That's very specific.
You know? Yeah. But I'm just saying that, like, when people say certain things, I think other people pick it up and then they're like, oh, yeah, I can create these standards of if you don't drive a BMW and you don't live in the north and you don't do X, Y, Z, then, hey, who are you? Where you miss out the context in which why people said that in the first place. Like, having a car makes life easier.
Yeah,
it makes dating easier.
But you mustn't then be mean about Midrand because in your experience, Midrand's been bad. There must be some guys in Midrand who turn out to be terrific boyfriends. Don't be mean.
Right now, that stigma's not going anywhere, you know. But I'm not judging people that, like, have moved out the house and, like, live in Randburg, for example. I'm just judging Midrand dudes with no furniture.
Sure.
That's all I'm saying. So I'm just saying that, like, context matters in this dating conversation where if you do have standards, great for you, love it for you, but also put it in the context of serious economy. Like, things are very tough, so you're just expecting...
No, sure. I agree with you. Context is everything. It's not going to happen. And Congo Chris says, I think this is also, this is debatable. If she has a male best friend when you meet her.
I agree. I live by that. Like,
all right.
Say more.
Those are dangerous waters, dangerous territory. Don't do that. If she has a male best friend and he has a female best friend, just let it go.
But why?
Just let it go. Because... those two are very close, right? They're very close. They spend a lot of time together. But also, when it comes to the opposite gender, talking about men here, there's always an ulterior... well, yeah. There's always, like, a ulterior motive when it comes to, like, male and female friendships. And it's easy for female to have, like, platonic relationships, but I don't think so for men. And I think he's just waiting for that opportunity when you're crying on his shoulder to just be like, you trifling, these niggas did X, Y, Z. And then he's just like, come closer. And the hug is a bit too tight. And welele, don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to yourself. That is a relationship that's going to happen after your breakup.
But hold on. So is there, so you don't see a possibility here where having a friend with the opposite gender actually allows you to better understand and therefore help better shape future relationships?
Oh, definitely. So you can have male friends. I just don't believe in the notion of a male bestie. A male best friend. I don't believe in that context. Like, no, ma'am. Why are we doing sleepovers? No. Yeah, that's my bestie. I don't play like that.
I don't play
those games. When you Archer and, like, you're heartbroken, the person you're going to run to is most likely going to be your best friend. Why is that a man? Why is it... in my context, I always look, why are you running to another female? Why are you crying on her chest? That's dodge.
We're going to park this stuff because I don't think any of us are necessarily in the same situation Simpi was in. Like, you're ready for a relationship, you said so, but you're looking for these red flags.
I'm not looking for them. It's just no.
Kind of hinted at it.
I will say this. I mean, I am ready for a relationship. Shoot your shot. I'm 29 and my grand's been reminding me that I'm not married. So.
Pressure's back on.
The pressure is getting worse. But in that same breath, I do have standards and I do have things that I look for that will be like ting, ting, ting.
Ooh, Hermine says here in the comments, nonsense. I have two male best friends and I've been married for 18 years.
Just because you're the exception to the rule doesn't mean that the rule doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Luando Nonzaba says, not all men are the same. What's your thought on a man that has only sisters as siblings?
Ooh. I mean, that's good. That means, like, ideally, he should know how to treat women really, really well because he's grown up in a household of women. But it doesn't always relate. Like, there's some men that are just trash. Doesn't matter if they have only sisters as siblings. Doesn't matter if they come from a good background. It doesn't matter if they went, you know, and they're like, yeah.
Judas says four ways men are also red flags. Four ways. Just the whole of four ways. Now we're just writing off whole suburbs of people. All right, Ben, because we've got Dr. Victor coming in a little bit, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on this because I always love, I see you have sneakers that are, they're as clean as can be. Like, I just love a pair of sneakers that are well presented. Absolutely.
It's an exception.
Okay, but I know you like the sneakers, but I know you also, you wanted to talk about tech that you use to make your life simpler and easier and more efficient. And we were talking earlier about the sleep diagnosis that you have on your phone, which tells you how many hours you got and, you know, you can look at those statistics.
Yeah, I've got this ring here.
You got the ring, okay.
It's an Aura ring. It does a whole bunch of things.
Does it work?
Yeah, it does.
How long have you had it?
I've had it for nearly 2 years.
Okay.
That is the one piece of equipment that someone I know who's a serious athlete, they swear by that.
Yeah.
They say that's the best one you can get.
So it does a whole bunch of things. So this is, I don't know, and I think the interesting thing is around, do we actually use the tech that we have to its full maximum capacity?
If you're connected to a medical aid like some that will remain nameless, then they do it for you and they find out what's wrong with you before you even know. And then they increase your premiums. But I don't think most people look at these things very much. But is this one of the things that you would consider important?
Let's talk about the sleep. So my total sleep time last night was 5 hours, 36 minutes.
Good. Better than mine.
My lowest heart rate was a little bit high. I wonder why, but 71 BPM. Mm. And then there's like the breathing rate.
That was your lowest?
Yeah.
Ooh. Sure.
But I woke up like 4 times. So
there's something wrong with you. The man's got problems.
I was intimidated by being invited into this show.
Yeah, well, you can't blame us for everything. We have nothing to do with your resting heart rate.
So then there's activity, so total calorie burns, walking equivalents, staying active, moving every hour.
How often do you look at these results?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
Not a lot. I think it's great to have and know that you have it, mm-hmm. but...
So when you talk about the kind of tech that makes your life better, yesterday with Pumi, we were talking about a Moleskine notebook that also automatically transfers it to your cloud. So it does a digital version while you're writing on the paper. Really? Costs like 5,000 rand or something.
Can it read my handwriting? I bet you it can't.
Yeah, I haven't seen your handwriting, but if you say that, then it's probably true.
I struggle to read my own handwriting.
But to me, that would be a huge waste.
I do. That's why I use my, you know, the notes app.
Yeah, I do the same.
Like even things like writing speeches, which I you know sometimes have to do.
I keep notes on everything.
Okay. Yeah, I'm old school. I write it down. I write it down.
I mean, that's a beautiful handwriting. You clearly were not meant to be a doctor. I think I was.
This is the stuff.
I missed my calling.
Every single day. So when I've got meetings, yesterday I met with Simpiwe here, all my notes from that meeting.
Yes.
I love it, but I don't want to have that stored in the cloud as well. And then if you're buying a 5,000 Rand Moleskine, like, I don't see that because once you've filled it, it's not like a digital pad that you can clear it and use it again. That seems like a lot of money for.
But now, like, they have like infinity pages now. Mm. So I guess if they incorporate that with that kind of technology, then you don't need to ever replace it.
Still, I'm thinking that's unnecessary tech.
Yeah. I never needed an iPad,
I never needed it. And I have one, and I use it occasionally for the show. I could probably do without.
I use the iPad as a TV, because we're talking about F1 earlier on. I've got an F1 app that, you know, watch all the qualifying, all the practice. I can watch like each driver individually from their cockpit view.
Sure,
really are a fan.
But that's kind of. I don't watch traditional TV anymore. I use even for Netflix, for Showmax, for Disney. It's on my iPad, sort of a fairly large one. But that's kind of what I use the iPad for. But the dictation app on my phone is a lifesaver, because like when you're writing speeches, when you're writing notes,
I can see that in your job that must be just, very useful.
It's just very useful, because when you get to the office or when you get to wherever, you can just kind of start editing a document that's already kind of half done.
So what are the absolute essentials? So you've got that Aura Ring on. You obviously need your phone all the time.
Yep.
Do you have expensive audio?
I'll plead the fifth on that. No. No.
No?
So, I've got reason. They're not expensive, but quality is important from an audio point of view. And I'm also, I wear hearing aids now as well. So,
can't you hear properly? What? You gave me nonsense about being old. You're Ben.
No, it's for the motor racing days. All the noise, damage.
Yeah. And the radio, wearing those headphones all the time.
Yeah, potentially.
Potentially.
But look, I think, we were talking about AI. I think AI is also something that, I don't know whether it qualifies as tech, but it's something that's in my world is also taking some of the idiot stuff away.
Sure.
Right. To actually allow you to be creative and think. And I know there's a big debate. People are worried about it taking jobs away. But I suppose the challenge is finding ways of using it. It's like cars didn't replace horses, or they didn't make horses go away. They just gave them a different function, a different use.
Different job description.
Different job description.
Right. Well, I'm thrilled that this morning we get to spend a little bit of time with a man who I got to see performing live last year. He's sharper and better than ever. I mean, musicians just get better and better as they go. And this guy he's like leading that charge. For more than 40 years, Dr. Victor, whose real name is Victor Hojan, has been crafting, creating an uplifting, up-tempo sound that has earned him the reputation of being one of South Africa's finest. And I can completely stand by that. He began playing when he was still at school. Band was the CC Beat, mainly influenced by Afro pop stars like Blondie, Papa Harare, Rich John Smith, the American pop acts, the Jackson 5, and so many others. And I'm just thrilled that he managed to make some time for us today, because I know how busy he is. He's still performing all over the place, and he is in huge demand. And his songs have gone all over the world. So it is obviously the man I'm talking about this morning, none other than Dr. Victor. Such a pleasure to see you, Dr. Victor. How are you, sir?
Good morning.
It's nice to have you here. Yeah, what a pleasure.
Morning, ma'am.
Morning.
How are you, sir? Mr. Garrett Clough, thanks for having me.
I saw you at a friend's birthday party in November.
Well, Rian's birthday.
Yeah, he was, I mean, only someone as important as him could have talked you, I don't know how he managed to talk you into that, because I don't think you do birthday parties anymore.
We actually do from
you
time
do?
To time. You know, when COVID came, we were thrown in a deep end, and to survive, we did all sorts of things to survive. We all had our streaming cameras up.
Sure.
And playing for donations, and when that didn't work, we did this and that, and parties and shout outs for a donation until COVID was over. So we do, from time to time, we do a lot of things, you know, just to the art of survival.
So you did so many things that people just love in this country. And whenever they think of those Eddie Grant classics, I mean, that's where people get really excited. But your band is one of the tightest bands I've seen. How long have all these guys been playing with you, and how often do you have to refresh them? Because you seem to like run ahead and they have to catch up.
Yeah, well, I have my flaws, you know. It's like a coach that takes over a football team. I just try and get the youngsters to practice as much as we can, and to try and keep that the standard that we had the previous years. And it gets more difficult than the. It's not easy because a lot of our guys have passed on over the years.
Yeah,
and
that's what I'm saying. You know your stuff.
So, you know. So I try to keep the boys together. I'm the only one left now, and one of our other members, he's in Thailand now. So in South African soil, I'm the only guy left to keep with a bunch of young guys. I think what you saw at Rian's birthday, that was a new generation. It was a new lineup. So I tried to keep the guys, tell them there's nothing wrong with good old hard work and practice, you know. They say, what's the way to Carnegie Hall? Said, practice, you know. So you just got to repeat some of the stuff. And that's what I love music, and that's what I do, you know.
You mentioned earlier on about the challenges that came with the COVID environment. I just want to get a sense of how you manage music as a passion and as a craft, something that really fulfills you from a joy point of view, and the business aspect of it. Because I think one of the challenges that the industry faces is that inability to manage the two. How do you do it? What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, you know, all my expensive toys, I look around the studio, I see expensive mics, a desk.
Sure.
So I've been collecting Neumann mics and AKGs and Sennheisers and some cameras, you know, just so, you know, toys for boys, you know, stuff that I had. First of all, they had to go to sustain the band because I didn't go from an 8-piece band immediately to a 4-piece and to a 3-piece. A lot of people did that. I kept my staff. I played at Katsy's last night, and one of the managers asked me one thing they liked about my band. Throughout the COVID, we came with a full band. So that was very, very difficult because, first of all, so if someone gives you $5,000, you have to split that $5,000 10 ways, you know.
Sure.
So we kept going like it. We just kept. Luckily, COVID didn't. I think it lasted for the most part about 3 years. So first of all, I had to sell my truck. I had a nice Mercedes Benz for myself. I sold that to sustain the band, you know. And I kept on selling my Pro Tools. I sold my Logic. I sold everything. I just kept going, selling. And
people always think that, you know, when you're an established musician who gets the kind of bookings that you do, that you'll always be fine, that there's so much money flying around. That's not the case at all.
No, that's not the case at all. Because if you look at the bigger bands, the Mango Grooves, the Johnny Clegg's, you know, and I don't know even who else. Brayu is gone, Yuma Sakela is gone, you know. So I was forced to become a senior overnight. You know, I'm not that old. I'm turning 60 this year. And but I believe, you know, there was a saying that the people said, this too shall pass. And I had all my hopes in that saying, you know. And when COVID was over, and I'm glad, you know, had I chopped the band from an 8-piece to a 3-piece, a lot of other guys. My sound engineer has been with me for 26 years. And if I let him go, what else was he gonna do? Because the Ama piano bands or the quieto bands, they don't really need sound engineer. They put in a memory stick and off they go. Yeah. For us, you know, with the drum kit, the bass amp, the guitar, the organs.
That stuff has to be tuned.
I'm telling you, some people get annoyed with us. You know, we pull up 2 o'clock and then we're just about ready 6 o'clock to play. You know, so it's. We still do it the old way, but I enjoy every bit of it. And
and real instruments, you can't beat that sound, man.
Gareth was saying earlier that he's old. And I guess maybe that's the challenge with modern music, that there's some soul, I think, that's missing. And that's kind of using real instruments and real people kind of really digging into the soul of music.
And you become a part of you are part of something bigger than just letting people go and firing people. Like you remember that old show of Donald Trump, you fired, you know.
Yeah, the Apprentice.
I can't do that because these guys are literally more important than my brothers and sisters way back home in Kimberley. I've been with most of it almost 30 years, you know. So you just keep going, you know. The other guy who, one of our roadies, he's from Zimbabwe, and he's been with me almost 20 years since I had a flat in Hillbrow in Parktown. And when I look at him, he knows nothing else but the Dr. Victor Narastarebel's brain. We look forward to getting up, going to the airport or playing it. A party, Rian's party, or Ketsi's.
Has it all picked up again in the kinds of ways that you'd hoped? I mean, is it really busy for you at the moment? For example, yeah. I know you're doing a show on Saturday the 6th at the Theatre Marcellus at Empress Palace.
Yeah, it's sort of picked up, but it's like a domino effect. So the things, you know, I'm still paying my credit cards. We're still trying to get a combi again, you know. So we're hiring from Avis or Tempest. So you need to fill that gap.
Sure.
So obviously, we're all still reeling from the effects of COVID. It's there, you know. So I wish the government could just sit down and say, you know what, Victor's a good guy, Garrett is a good guy, you know. They didn't mean to be in these whatever, you know. Let's start from scratch, you know, and pick a few people. Pick a few people, not everybody, but a few people. But it is what it is. And we're starting to find our footing again, and it's picked up nicely again. We're recording again. I got most of my stuff in my studio back again.
And excellent.
COVID's also taught me that you don't need four microphones. It was just, you know, four microphones, six guitars, you know.
Right.
It's just, we were all just extravagant. So COVID taught us you need one car to get to the studio or get to Cliff Central, in one guitar and one microphone. And that's what I've learned from COVID. This morning I got up, there was no water. I went back to my roots. So I found water somewhere, you know, a little bit water, two water. And then I put it in a pot, and it was too hot to put the face cloth in. And I had to wait. So you want to, you don't want to come smelly here.
Well, don't worry.
But that backup will always be there. You know how to do it. I'm from the townships, you know. And we used to take a bath in a basin, and it's like riding a bike. So it just came back again. And yeah, hopefully I'm smelling fresh, you know.
You smell
so
fresh. Yeah. Don't worry. No one here was going, oh,
thank you
Victor.
So much. Yeah.
Listen, so Jethro says here in the comments, in the early 90s, we were a support act for Dr. Victor in Grahamstown once at the Standard Bank Arts Festival. And he says, you're a true gent and a music guru. I think that's about right. Sanele says, my memory of Dr. Victor, bad advice. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a pretty woman your wife.
Well, there was just a song at the time.
But do you still stand by that?
No more. I've grown up now. But the real beauty is from within, you know.
Think that?
Yes. The real beauty is from within.
No. Simpiwe, you agree with that?
It helps to cry in a Bentley.
And if you got a good looking husband or wife?
I'm just saying, Beyonce married Jay-Z. It helps to cry in a Bentley. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're right.
What's the best part about being in a band, especially when you've got people who you tour with, you go to all these events, you do gigs together, you get ready, you spend a bit of time, you have meals together. It's like having another family, right?
Absolutely. The best part of being in the band, you don't feel naked on the stage. There's always someone who can make up for you. We feed off each other's energy in the band. Sometimes you have an off day and you sing a song and you just know that it's not your A game. But when you look at the other guy, you know that he's giving 200%. And it helps you. By the third song, you're back in it. You know, it's like, you know, you're only as good as your goalkeeper, you know. So last night I looked at Donay on drums and he's just enjoying it, just hitting those things, you know. It's just enjoying himself. And I look at the bass and I look at the keys. There's always something to look forward to. And by the time you look at the people, you're just in it, you know.
Let me ask you something, because a lot of bands get very uptight about playing covers.
Yeah.
And you guys are damn good at covers.
Yeah.
And you can do all kinds of stuff, 70s stuff, 80s, 90s, you know, 2000s and beyond. And you keep up to date, but people love those covers, especially in South Africa, right? You get hired to do something and you bring a whole bunch of new music or your own stuff that they don't care for. And most people in the crowd get annoyed. They want to hear those hits. And they know that when they hire someone like you, you're going to come in and deliver on that front. You don't get precious about doing covers, do you? You don't mind that at all.
No, I don't mind it at all. You must understand, you you were part of a big show. And if I ask you now, for if you remember five people who made a mark in the South African music industry, the people are there listening, tuned in to the show right now. They won't remember. I remember Heinz Winkler, and that's about it, you know. And the thing is.
You mean from like a TV talent show? Yeah.
From idols. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So the thing is, what do you? The question is: do we love music or do we love our own egos? So for me, I love music so much. I've been a member of Semro since 1981, and I have hundreds of songs there, but maybe four or five are memorable songs, or three or four were hits. But the thing is, while you have to send your children to school and varsity and all that, these things, these bills don't come easy. And you're not going to tell the landlord, you know, I can't pay you because I only play original music. You know, it's a difficult one because music is music, and we are trying. You know, I know a lot of friends. You know, there was Little Sister. There's Helicopters. The only guy who I can remember played all his own original music all the time was Johnny Clegg. Nobody else. If I talk about Hot Sticks. A song that comes to mind is Burnout, and nothing else. He's done dozens of other albums, but we'll always remember Burnout, you know. So
for sure.
So it's a difficult one, you know. I became a musician for the music, not for the politics of it. You know, I'll always be a musician, whether I play in a little restaurant or whatever, you know, I play music, you know, and it's a difficult one. We write our songs, but I guess people want familiar things out there. They want to check, wow. Before Hope Johanna came to play, we had other 10 songs, but they went with Hope Johanna. So I can't complain. At that time, I was living in Hilbra. I didn't have a car. I didn't have nothing. But then that song became a hit, and it just happened to be a cover. So it changed my life. I went out of my one bedroom flat into a bigger flat, and I got myself a 1600 Toyota, and I took it from there. So you don't complain. I love music, and I don't know what to make of it. You know, with the other stuff. You know,
how does your audience in a live environment energize you? You spoke about your team and your band, kind of, you know, putting up the gaps and energizing each other. What role does the audience play in terms of helping you guys lift?
Irritate you and get in the way and ask for and ask for requests. That's what they do.
Our audiences, they probably play the biggest role from you know, the adrenaline feeding off them. They know when we're down, and they'll just say, "No, you didn't play like last week. What's wrong?" And they, most of the time they spot on, but. Although they can't always hear pitching and tuning, and Garrett knows about it, because I always tell people, I know a lot of my friends and a lot of other bands that I've seen, they get the vibe right, but then the pitching and all technical things are all over the place. Now I have both, I have a bit of a curse, you know, when something's off, it just annoys me, you know. Even if people enjoy it, because if you look at a person, people like Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder, they don't see the vibe, they feel it. So in other words, the nuances and the tuning and all those things, it's so nice if a album sounds good, and it also speaks to you lyrically and all that stuff. So for me, the audience, sometimes you gotta fill in the gaps of giving them something that they don't know what they want, but you must know they need this now. And a lot of musicians don't like DJs, but I think of myself like a DJ. Like if I just fill in the gaps what Garrett said earlier, because I look at DJs and just one song after the other. And bands sometimes they're too old fashioned. And I think that's where my band has got it right over the years, where we we feel sort of these people need something, a mid-tempo, you know, like a 85. Give them 2385s, 110, and you know now we need to take it to 120, 126. Quick. And before they get annoyed, throw in a reggae there. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just
keep them on their toes.
Keep them on their toes. And it's because, but I think we as artists, we have this whole big thing about we're fans of ourselves and this whole ego thing going. Sometimes we're so entertained by our own ego, we don't even notice when 20 people leave and another 10 leave because and I look at those
yeah,
things.
But also, let's be fair, and Benedict, this goes for a lot of the stuff that you and I have done over the years too. Sometimes the audience don't know what they want until you give it to them.
Absolutely.
And, am I right, Victor? Absolutely. I mean, like sometimes they do and they're very good and they can direct you and often I'll see what's going on here, like today with you and the Formula One in the comments. And people are like, oh, this is good. We need this. We want more of this. This is what we like.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they're like, they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Mm. Oh. I agree 100%. People, humans, we will just be people. And one moment we want this, one moment we don't want it. You know, and it's like in politics. You want this guy. For the life of me, I can't believe in America. You know, it almost looked like Trump is going to win again. But they had him before, and they didn't want him. But they want him again.
But do you have any strong feelings about that?
Yeah, you know, he might just win again. It's a funny part about the world. It's like a lack of leaders, you know, and it is what it is. But all across the world, but that's politics, you know. And if I find back to the audience are like that. It doesn't mean they don't know what they want. They just like they don't always know what they want. Mm. So sometimes a client comes to us, I say, you know, but the song by Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling, guys, I don't build it up, hit them hard. And yeah. you see 80-year-old sitting in front at a table, another 75-year-old. How can you start with that song? And the client says, didn't you get my email? I'll send you an email. Start with that song. And I just go against it. And then they come to me later and say, oh, thank you so much. You didn't go with what I said. You know?
I don't know what's happened. I don't know what's happened with your camera here, Victor. We're just trying to figure out what's going on here. But you know, your camera. It doesn't matter. We're listening to you like great. So, you said Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder. So that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Back to audio. So Dr. Victor is our guest this morning. We've also got Benedict Macher in here this morning to keep us company. And it's Friday, which means that the weekend begins for many of us. We're used to a little long weekend. It's going to be a tough one with only 2 days, right, Ben?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Did you go away at all?
No, I didn't. I like to keep my weekends at home, just kind of chilling. I think there's a lot that we do on a daily basis. And you've also got kids that's, you know, busy with matric and things like that. So going away is not always easy. But so chilling at home, watching sport.
Well, you've got a lot of that on your agenda. So do you get any time off, Victor, when you're not? I mean, because weekends is usually when you're busiest, right?
Yeah, no, but hardly. You know what's a funny thing? And I'm going to just say it on air, you know.
Go for it.
You know, I've been married 37 years now. We got married in 87 in Durban. And the thing is, I've never been on honeymoon. So my wife always throws in my face, you know. But I said, you know, we went to Sunset. We did a gig. We went on a couple of cruises. She said, she tells me, but you were playing, you know.
Yeah, it was work.
It's work,
but,
you know.
But when you're in the entertainment business, you're working when everyone else is on holiday. You can't exactly go.
No, it's a difficult one. So people want to be entertained. And you guys, nowadays there's less old school Otopi bands. It's me and I think Brendan and Jim and maybe the Rockets guys, they all passed away. Ray Pierce de Mella passed away. So we're trying to keep it real, you know. But
one of the reasons I was excited to have you in here, because I've seen you performing live just recently. And I love the fact that there's a band and you're very much in charge. You're like, you need to tune up a little bit. I see you like issuing quiet
Yeah, very dictatorial, you know. So
No, you are, but that's good. Because then the people know what their job is in the whole thing, right?
You know, sometimes the democracy is good, but it's not always a good idea, because sometimes you will let people make decisions just because they can. So my stuff is tried and tested, and it can be a bit of a one man show sometimes, but I don't want people to waste my time, you know. So I've tried many things in life, you know. I can quickly hear a couple of bars, you know, 4-8 bars. That song is not happening, man. And then I was like, let's try it. Because a lot of times.
How much time do you guys spend rehearsing?
Yeah, like we used to rehearse twice a week, but now once a week now. And with like from 12 till 6, I stay in Glen Hazel in Edenville. I don't know how the neighbors hold out. My place is not quite soundproof. It's not quite soundproof. But I have to thank them for their tolerance, because we make quite a bit of a noise when we go to the up-tempo stuff and the reggae stuff. Because it's full drums, keyboards, and distortion. And nowadays, I see that we started with a little sub like this. Now we have a bigger sub. And you know. But it's all good fun. And thank you so much to our neighbors, you know, for understanding.
So when you spend your life doing something that really gives you and brings you joy, right, how do you find activities, or what do you do when you're not playing music? Because it's easy to kind of get sucked into that, because you're good at it and it gives you joy. So how do you then, when you're not playing music, when you're not performing, how do you keep yourself?
I love carpentry, you know. I love, you know, I have all the circular saws. And
oh, really?
The blades. Yeah, my favorite store to go to is a Builder's Warehouse and Micah's store. So I can just walk. I'm just relaxed when I walk. I don't know why.
Okay.
But anyway, I like to make things, you know. I would probably look at this thing and make this table myself and check, okay, I want to put effects rack here and measure it out. And put my clamps, you know, glue it up. Next day, I'm just ready for the screws and the drill. It just relaxes me. So my wife says, you got 6 long clamps and 4 small ones, and now there's Marketplace on Facebook. Okay, so scroll. Okay, this guy is selling this. If it's safe, I'm gonna meet them at Eastgate or Rosebank. Like, how much you want? Or go to Cash Crusaders, because.
You're a carpenter as well. This is something I loved it,
you know. Wow. So if you go to the Kimberley Museum, people probably have one or two pictures of me making the our claim to fame in Kimberley is the equipment that was made by me. It wasn't original equipment. So the only thing that was original was the guitar. The keyboard, the drums, it was all handmade with wire and wood. And
that's phenomenal.
So that's where I come in. But now
and you can fix anything.
Anything.
If it goes wrong.
Remember where the name Dr. Victor comes from.
That's right. You were soldering some microphones
when we started out. So that I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. Other than that, we'll go for pizza and take the family. And now that I'm old, I'm more and more like my dad, you know. So take them out, you know, or go and watch Queen or the Joburg Theatre or Michael Jackson, one of those tribute acts or whatever, you know. Yeah, I'm not much of a club guy anymore, because it's late nights, you know.
We were saying the same thing.
Yeah, I know. You guys are getting old. But
Sylvia's just abandoned us.
No, she's just like Garrett's getting old. I'm not getting old.
Yeah, Garrett, only Garrett.
This is the guy with the hearing aid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the guy. Okay. So I really enjoy carpentry. So, but you know, if I weren't a musician, I'd probably go into something like that. And I understand there's not a lot of money in it, but what about the passion?
It gives you joy.
Absolutely.
But the same goes for music. You know, not everyone can earn. You're lucky that you're good enough. But I know loads of musicians who, maybe they don't have the business brain for it. Maybe they just don't have the energy for it, because it's a tough business to go out there and do gigs. And of course, the music itself doesn't earn you the money that it once did.
No.
But you've got to do what you love.
You got to do it. And sometimes you get people don't have budget, and sometimes it's for the church, and sometimes the people say now, no, we raising money for the for hospice or something. And you can't always say no because
screw those people who are dying. We're going to charge them.
No. I gotta do those gigs, man, because it keeps me in touch with who I am, keeps me in touch with the people, keeps me in touch with my roots.
And it also matters.
It matters. That's a good one. That's a good one. And it makes me sleep better that I did something, you know, not just because sometimes you get good money and you just go and buy a big TV like that one in the foyer. and knowing those people don't even have a Kellogg's or Weet-Bix or something, you can help, you know. So as I was saying before COVID, we just had a 4 or 5 spare of, you know, of everything. I'm sure the guys who play golf, they have so many clubs, and this one is for putting, and this one is for, but do you really need that? Maybe you need more practice.
We were talking about this as well this morning, and the kind of money that people waste on equipment like
Absolutely.
This. But listen, it's been a great pleasure to have you here this morning.
Thank you, sir.
I hope that we will see you performing for many more years, because we need it in South Africa.
I'll be here as long as the people need me, because the only thing that makes us useful is for people wanting to see all South African artists, you know.
And there's so many.
And don't forget, Saturday at the Theatre of Marcellus at Empress Palace.
Dr. Benton
and the rest of, we're going to have all the fun. I love the track, Chong, Shambhala, Got to Be Real.
Beautiful.
Man. It's going to be fun.
And by the way, you can book at Ticket Pros or your nearest Spa, Peso and Kiosk if you want to go and check them out. That's Saturday, this Saturday, 8 p.m. at the Theatre of Marcellus at Emperor's Palace. Dr. Victor, it's such a pleasure
Thanks
to see
for
you.
This Thank platform. So much, really man. Enjoy it.
No, what
thank,
a pleasure.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Benedict Macher, so nice to spend some time with you this Friday morning.
Thank you, Jim.
Go into the weekend with a big smile on my face.
Pleasure.
And we will see you on Monday, everybody. Have an excellent weekend.
Thanks, Mr. B.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Cheers. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.